This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
I'm hiding in Honduras. I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan.
Hi, folks. This is Bob Main. Welcome to the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 92, back by popular demand, that intro song by Warren Zevon. And thanks again for tuning in. I am going to talk about IDPA again. Seems to be a popular subject. I like to shoot it at least a couple of times a month, and you guys are telling me that you like to hear the recaps on it. If you are new to this program, you've tuned in to a practical show. I'm not real technical. I'm not ex-law enforcement or ex-military. I'm not a firearms trainer, anything like that, not even a gunsmith, just a private guy that loves shooting. And I talk about my practical everyday experiences from an everyday guy's point of view. So all that technical stuff on tricking out AR-15s and 1911s and stuff, there's other podcasts for that. This is just going to be practical. If you've never shot IDPA, let me encourage you to do that. International Defensive Pistol Association, there's another league called USPSA that's very good. I really believe these competition sports help you with your gun handling skills. I've said many times on this show, they are not combat and gunfighting training. There are much more advanced skills, I would say. Maybe I shouldn't use the word advanced, but there are much more fight-oriented skills that you can learn from other trainers that are very good out there, and I would suggest that you do that. I've taken some. If you've been listening to my show for a while, you heard me review close-range gunfighting at Suarez International. I've taken two of their courses, and I highly recommend it. But IDPA is a good, inexpensive way to go out there and practice. $15, $20 maybe at the most. USPSA, probably around the same price. You can usually become a member of these organizations for like $40 or $50 a year. So last week I had the opportunity on Thursday night to go to Fort Worth, and I'll do a recap on that. I'll do a recap and I will tell you all about it. Before I get into that, I want to answer some listener questions before I do the IDPA recap. One listener recently emailed me and asked me about Militech lubricant, and what did I like about Militech? Militech, M-I-L-I-T-E-C, and I believe their website's militech.com. I will link to it. I have been using Militech over 5 years. I love it. That's the only lubricant I use on all of my firearms. It's not the cheapest, but I think it's very good. Now, you know, their advertising says it was tested in the desert by our military. You know, in the Middle East, whatever. I try something, and if it's good and it works, I stick with it. I don't pay too much attention to marketing. I will give a personal endorsement on Militech just because I've used it, not because I represent them in any way. I also use their grease. Now, on my Glock pistols, let me just warn you about over-lubricating. Don't over-lubricate a Glock. That causes problems. Glocks are meant to run dry. Sometimes 1911s and car pistols and so forth and SIGs might be, you know, able to handle more lubricant, and they like to run wet. Glocks like to run dry. The reason I like Militech's grease better, you can get like a one ounce tube of grease, and, you know, folks, an ounce tube of grease will last you forever. The grease stays put, especially on the slide rails. That's what I like. I just put a little dab, okay? Little dab will do you, right? That old Brill Cream stuff was a lot like gun grease, too, wasn't it? You remember that? That tells you how old I am, folks. I'm remembering Brill Cream commercials. Oh, gosh. Time is flying. Anyway, just a little dab inside the rails. And what I typically do is I usually put it near the rear of the rail so that when I put the slide back on the frame of my Glock and I rack that slide several times, a dozen times, it spreads the grease throughout that rail. That grease stays there. I've shot 4 or 5 IDPA matches and the grease is still there, folks. And that's what I like. You know, I like low-maintenance firearms, and I also like lubricant that stays there. So I would recommend either that or their oil. Now, I would say for Glocks, XDs, and M&Ps, please don't over-lubricate them. About 5 or 6 drops is all you need. Grease the rails, 1 drop, or 1 little dab. Just a very tiny bit on top of the barrel, just a little bit in the trigger mechanisms, and just a little bit right where the barrel lug locks into place, and that's it. I don't put that much lubricant on, folks. I've seen Glocks malfunction because they're over lubricated, and I've got to believe I've owned XDs and I've owned M&Ps as well, and they ran just fine with just a small amount of lubricant. I'm not saying a lot of lubricant, and I'm not saying no lubricant. Just a small amount. Follow the instructions. If you read, those of you that shoot Glocks, if you read Glock's manual, they tell you exactly how to lubricate it. Follow the instructions. But there's my answer on Militech. Good stuff. And I highly recommend it. Gun butter is another good one. When I was at close range gunfighting, one of the guys there was using gun butter, and I liked the applicator. I like the applicator. It makes it really easy to squirt the gun butter in there where it needs to be. So check on that as well. Another guy emailed me and wanted to know if it was natural to have a little bit of slide play in his Glock. Yes, it's definitely natural to have slide play. Folks, Glocks are loose-fitting guns. You know, these are not tightly put together target guns. These do not have high tolerances. They're meant to be a defensive weapon. They are plenty accurate. A little bit of slide wobble is not going to affect your accuracy enough for defensive purposes. I wouldn't worry about it. Plenty of people are very well defended with Glocks, XDs, and M&Ps. When I owned M&Ps, their slide play was a little bit, not quite as bad as a Glock, but it wiggled back and forth a little bit, forward, backward, and side to side. Same with the XDs that I had. If you're looking for a real tight gun that doesn't have any play anywhere on the gun, then probably a high-end 1911 is for you. But that could cause some other things you need to be concerned about. Like, for example, those you have to have them, keep them well maintained and well lubricated. It's your choice. But, sir, yeah, that's perfectly normal in your Glock. Just shoot it. Give it a 1,000-round trigger job. See how it's shooting. If after you give it your 1,000-round trigger job, if it's not shooting very well, get a hold of Glock. They will certainly take care of you. He bought a fourth-generation Glock 19. Good to see that. And, sir, thank you for sending me that question. Appreciate that very much. So, I wanted to get those two questions out of the way. With that said, quick 15-second musical break, and then I'm going to do my IDPA recap from last Thursday night's match. You're going to hear a before and an after. Here you go. Be back right after the break.
Whenever you see big city mayors campaigning for gun control, rows of uneasy-looking police officers are forced to stand behind the mayors. The reason our police friends are uneasy is they don't buy into the mayor's political scam. The president of the Black Police Caucus said his members believe there should be no gun rationing, and nearly 100% of their membership thinks criminals are able to obtain guns through illegal means. Likewise, 94% of the National Association of the Chiefs of Police believe that citizens should be able to purchase firearms for self-defense and sporting purposes. Maybe this is why billionaire New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg called the 32,000-member Fraternal Order of Police a fringe group, because unlike Michael, cops know who the good guys are, namely you, not Bloomberg. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Welcome to the main topic, which is IDPA. At the time that I'm recording this, it is Thursday night, the 21st of October, 2010. It's actually Thursday at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I am in my vehicle, as I often do this show, but I'm on the way to an IDPA shoot, taking the rest of the afternoon off of work. Shh, don't tell anybody. But I'm heading out to Fort Worth. Fort Worth is about a 37-mile drive from my house, and there's a club there called Cross Timbers IDPA. It's an indoor match, and so what I thought I was going to do here is, on the way over there, record some of my initial thoughts and what my plan is tonight, because I'm going to do things a little bit differently than what I typically do when I shoot IDPA. So I'm going to give you a before and an after. This is the before, this is the thought and the plan process on the way to the match. Now, having said that, this is one of the things that you get to do when you shoot IDPA that you don't get to do in real life in a real life self-defense situation. And what I mean by that is you get to plan it out. You get to at least think things out in advance. Bad guys aren't going to give you that chance, are they? Obviously not. You know, bad guys are going to be hitting you when you don't expect it. But for competition, and I guess that's why some people say that competition is not exactly like real life. And of course, all right, yeah, I'll give them that. But there's one thing that I will stand by that I don't think can be denied, and that is competition like IDPA matches, International Defensive Pistol Association, for those of you who are not real familiar, they give you the ability to always practice good gun handling skills. And I like to do it twice a month. I like to shoot these matches twice a month. The way I look at it, folks, is if I'm not going out and shooting twice a month, and I don't mean standing at a square range and plinking away. I mean action shooting. Shooting moving targets, shooting on the move, shooting from different positions, shooting with one hand, shooting with the weak hand only, using sights, not using sights, things like that. If I'm not doing that a couple of times a month, then I'm not keeping my skills sharp. And I would suggest that you do it too. You can, if you really budget your time, you can budget a couple times a month. At least minimum, do it once a month. For the $15 cost plus the ammo, folks, you just can't beat the practice. So here's my thoughts. Let me tell you what I'm going to shoot tonight first. I'm going to shoot one of my Glock 19s. Now, you've heard me say quite a bit that Steve Zoffi has motivated me to spend a whole entire year shooting my Glock 19, since that's my main carry gun. In competition and in training, I'm going to dedicate an entire year to it. I have a competition dedicated gun. I have a Glock 34, but that's not what I'm. That thing's going to warm up my safe for a while. I have two different G19s. One of them is completely stock configuration, except for the sights. The one I'm going to shoot tonight, I'm going to do something a little bit different than what I've normally done. This is kind of my tricked out Glock 19. Now, it's not super tricked out. It's just a little bit tricked out. Let me tell you how this thing is set up. First of all, this is the one that I had the grip reduction done by Dale Hunnicutt in Houston, gripreductions.com. Highly recommend his work. It was just a slight grip reduction. In other words, all he did was basically take the hump off of the backstrap of the gun. Now, for some of you who say that a Glock doesn't fit your hand, you ought to try someone's. If you're ever shooting with me, I'll let you try this one. It feels great. It's awesome. I mean, all it is just, it. You know, the backstrap is flat. It's like a 1911 with a straight backstrap. That's what the backstrap feels like. He doesn't narrow the grip at all. Well, just ever so slightly by taking that hump off of the back of the pistol. I had him leave the finger grooves on because I happen to like the finger grooves of a third generation Glock 19. So those are there. I had him 360 texture. In other words, he put what he calls his rough carry texture on it. Now, one of the things I love about his rough carry texture, you ought to go to gripreductions.com and check it out. It gives me a good positive purchase on the gun. Good positive grip on the gun. My fingers do not slip. And I shot this thing this summer when it was 105 degrees out. My hands were sweating, and my grip was not slipping, and I like that. But it's not so abrasive that it rubs and you know, makes my skin raw. I rarely carry without an undershirt. Right now I'm wearing one of those really super thin wife beater undershirts. I rarely go anywhere without an undershirt on, but if I do carry the gun, then it's not going to be digging into my skin, and that's what I really like about the grip. So that's, and by the way, he's built a little bit of a magazine well into it too. Not much, just a real slight magazine well that does not make the grip any less concealable. The other modification I've done to this G19, by the way, I've done nothing to the trigger. I want to get that out right now. I've done nothing. Absolutely nothing. So the trigger is 100% complete stock Glock trigger. No spring change outs, nothing. The other modification is I have switched out to a non-captured metal recoil guide rod. And I'm using a Wolf spring, a Wolf recoil spring, which is the standard weight. So it's still the standard recoil spring weight. I ordered it from Wolf Spring. Gunsprings.com is where I got it from. It's a Wolf spring kit. and I ordered the standard Glock weight. So this thing is going to recoil. The slide's going to recoil pretty much just like a standard Glock. The reason I'm using that metal guide rod is I just like them better. And the fact that I can switch out springs easily is what I like about it. It's non-captured, so if I don't like that spring and I want to reduce the spring weight, I can just take that out real easily and put a new one on there. And if I want to go heavier, that's easy to do as well. And let's see, what else about my G19? Oh, I also put those Pierce magazine extensions. And here's what I'm going to do tonight. Let me do this a little bit differently. I'm going to use standard magazines that I carry for the first couple stages. And then I'm going to switch to the magazines with the grip extensions on them. Now, the only reason I use the grip extensions is not because I need more grip space. My hand does not extend past the bottom of the grip of a Glock 19. Right? The reason I use those grip extensions on my magazine is because I can get a more positive grip on that mag when I pull it out of my mag carrier. So when I go to perform a reload, it's easier for me to pull it. It's faster. However, for two stages, I'm not going to do that tonight. Now, tonight's going to be a four-stage match. For two stages, I'm just going to use my regular carry magazines. I want to get practice with what I carry. That's why I shoot these matches. I am not an expert shooter, folks. I'm just an IDPA sharpshooter. So I'm not a really super highly classified shooter. I do this a lot, and you probably be thinking, well, geez, Bob, you've been shooting for 6 years. You should be better than a sharpshooter. Yeah, I should be better than a sharpshooter. So I haven't been practicing the classifier enough. That's the truth. And I missed expert qualification by only 6 seconds the last time I shot the classifier. So I'm not that far off of expert. But I'm going to be honest, I'm not an expert shooter. So it's you know, I'm not going there trying to be a gamer tonight. I want to practice with my carry gun and get better. So the first couple stages, I'm going to use my concealed carry magazines. I'm also using my CompTac MTAC holster, which is one of my concealed carry holsters. I can't shoot from appendix inside the waistband. IDPA doesn't allow it. So the Del Fricke Archangel holster has been left at home in my holster box. And I'm using, so I'm going to go ahead and draw. I'm going to use the whole match, my CompTac MTAC. Love it. So comfy. It's inside the waistband, and it's holding that pistol up close to my body. So I'm going to have to be real positive about my draw. And I'm going to go to the safe room, and I'm going to practice my draw several times before I get started with the match. And I was doing some dry firing last night and some practicing last night, too, from the same holster. So that shouldn't be too much of a problem. And folks, you know what? I'm not going to wear a vest. I'm wearing a polo shirt, untucked, relatively baggy. So I'm going to go to the match just like I carry. And I'm going to put my magazines. At first, I'm going to put them in the mag carrier. And then for the last couple stages, I think I'm going to put them in my back pocket, which is legal in IDPA. And I like to sometimes carry a spare magazine next to my wallet in my back pocket. So again, why not practice like I carry? Everything I'm talking about, a lot of what I'm talking about is going to put me at a disadvantage from a gaming standpoint. The inside the waistband concealed carry holster, considered a disadvantage from a gaming standpoint. The mags with no mag extensions, and they're Glock 19 mags, so they're the compact mags. They're not the full-size Glock 17 style mags. That's considered a disadvantage. Okay, drawing spare mags out of my back pocket, that's considered a huge disadvantage. Why? No serious gamer would do something like that, but I am not going there for that purpose. I'm going there to get better with what I conceal carry with. So that's my plan. Now, because of the modifications that I've made to this Glock 19, I'm going to have another disadvantage. This puts me in what's called the ESP category. ESP stands for Enhanced Service Pistol. IDPA says that if you modify the grip in any way other than stock configuration, that doesn't count putting skateboard tape. You can put skateboard tape on it, but they say if you modify the grip, you are then put in the enhanced service pistol category. And they also say, which I think is a really stupid rule, but I got to live with it, they say if you change out the recoil guide rod to a metal guide rod, you're in the ESP category. Now, I think it's stupid, but I'm not going to argue with IDPA. SSP means stock service pistol, and it's supposed to be a gun that's like a regular service pistol that's stock. So, in other words, when you go buy it at the store, they want you to keep it as much as possible the way you buy it at the store. Okay? They let you change out the sights, and that's really about it. You can't change much else on the gun. Oh, one more thing. I am using the extended magazine release button. Now, that's legal for a stock service pistol because Glock makes a factory gun with an extended magazine release button, which is the Glock 34. So IDPA says, oh, hey, guess what? That's legal because Glock makes it that way. But if you change the pistol in any way, if you change it other than the original manufacturer's, the way the manufacturer builds it, if you change it any other way except for sights, you're generally not legal in the IDPA stock service pistol category. So I'm going to shoot ESP tonight, enhanced service pistol. What does that mean? For some of you who are not real familiar with IDPA, it means I'm going to be up against some tougher competitors. I'm going to be up against some people with more gamer-style guns, and the times are I have to achieve better times to be able to win in the ESP division. I doubt I'm even going to come close to winning because there's some pretty good ESP shooters. But if you study IDPA at all, if you look at the classifier times, you've got to be faster with an ESP gun to graduate to the next level, because IDPA assumes if you've made these kinds of modifications that your gun's easier to shoot. Now, I got to agree with IDPA. Your gun is easier to shoot with some of these modifications. I love shooting this modified Glock 19. It is sweet. And let me tell you, the grip modifications, no way, shape, or form does that grip reduction compromise the reliability of the gun. All it's doing is reshaping the polymer grip. That's it. Doesn't compromise reliability one bit. And of course, I've made no trigger modifications. I have no problem carrying this gun, and I feel good about carrying it because it has fired every time. This Glock has about 3,600 rounds through it. I've shot about that much through it, so I'm very used to shooting it. So this is a little bit different than what I'm normally doing. Oh, here's something else I'm going to do. I've never tried this before. I've already got my magazines loaded up. Some of my mags have 115 grain, Blazer. Some of them have CCI Blazer 115 grain, and some of them have Winchester Ranger 147 grain flat nose. So some of my mags have 147 grain ammo, and some of them have 115 grain. And one of my mags, I stuck both in there. I stuck some 115 and some 147 in the same mag. Sorry, had to grab a quick phone call. Don't worry, folks. I'm being safe, by the way, while I'm doing all this and driving and so forth. Trust me, I'm being real safe. Anyway, the reason I mixed and matched the ammo, 115 grain, 147 in the same magazine, I want a different feel. When I shoot that stage, some of that is going to recoil differently. Some of that ammo is going to recoil different. You know, the 147 grain feels more of a pushback, whereas the 115 grain has more of a muzzle flip. Now, you might think, well, the lighter bullet's going to recoil less. You know, recoil is a subjective thing. To me, anyway, you might differ, but to me, the recoil of the 115 grain ammo creates a little bit more muzzle flip, where the 147 9mm gives me more of a pushback. So I'm going to have two of them, two different types in the same magazine, probably four or five of each type. So I'm going to do that just to kind of throw myself off a little bit. I'm going to purposely throw myself off. That's intentional. I'm trying to put myself at a disadvantage tonight. For the reason is, in a fight, I might be in a disadvantage. I hope not, but I might. And if I'm going to be in a disadvantage in a fight, I want to practice by being in a disadvantage, and I want to practice with the unexpected hitting me. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to create the unexpected. So I'll let you know how it goes. So that's kind of my little summary. That's my plan, and I just got here to the range, and I'm actually here an hour early. So I'm going to get in there, and I'm going to pay my fee and stuff and maybe see if I can sneak into a lane and practice and warm up a little bit. I'm not sure if I'm going to get a chance to do that or not. Depends on how things go. But There's my thoughts. There's my plan. You're going to hear about a 15-second musical break. I'm going to take a good 4-hour and 20-minute break or so, and I'll let you know how the match went. That'll be the second half of the main topic. So here you go. Here's your break, and I'll catch you after the match. Talk to you in a bit.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
Well, back for segment two of the main topic. IDPA is over with. So it's about 8:40 p.m. I'm driving home. My plan worked, folks. The plan to challenge myself and put myself at a disadvantage, let me tell you, it worked. We got five stages in tonight, a little less than 20 shooters. I think we had 18, 19 shooters. So we were able to get five stages in a real short period of time. And three out of five stages I did pretty well. Two stages were terrible. I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute. Few things I noticed. First of all, working from a concealed carry holster. Boy, I'm glad I did that. Yeah, it's slower. Yes, I was at a disadvantage, but I'm glad I did it. I'm going to keep on doing it. I'm going to keep working from my inside-the-waistband MTAC. Slower, yeah, but I didn't care. Fast enough, let me tell you. But that's good. See, good practice, because that gun's up and tight into my body, and it's harder to draw, of course, than a regular outside-the-waistband belt holster. So that was good. My plan of using the magazines without the extensions, that didn't slow me down too much. I thought it was gonna, but it really didn't. So, you know, I scratched that idea. Putting those magazine extensions on there, probably only good if you need the extra length of the grip. Doesn't really seem like it helps me at all to get my magazines out of my magazine pouch any faster. The strategy of using my Glock 19 without any modified trigger. Of course, neither one of my Glock 19s have any modified triggers. You know what? I still can't tell too much of a difference between my standard trigger on my G19 and my slightly modified trigger on the Glock 34. I can't. I mean, you know, as I mentioned in the recent interview that I did, I've changed out the trigger spring on my G34 to an overpowered trigger spring, which is supposed to help with the trigger pull a little bit, but I just can't tell that much of a difference. Maybe some people can, not me. My plan of mixing the ammo up, that worked real well. I could definitely notice the difference there. I could definitely notice the difference in the feel of the 115s versus the 147s. And when I got to the magazine where I had them interspersed throughout the magazine, that was a trip. That was interesting because that stage, well, I'll tell you about that stage in just a minute. I also did something else that just kind of hit me while I was there. I loaded up one magazine with my carry ammo. Corban DPX 115 grain. Now, you don't want to do this too much. That stuff's expensive. It's $2 a round. But, yeah, I just wanted to see. And, yeah, it definitely, it's got a lot more muzzle flip. Not uncontrollable. That's what I love about that ammo. That's what I love about Corban DPX. It's got that solid copper Barnes X bullet. You know what? I'm not worried about that thing expanding if I ever have to use it in self-defense. But even though they're 115s, they're so much hotter loaded than the regular practice ammo. That was a trip. That was fun using that. And I would suggest that you do that, like I said, not too often. I don't know if you can afford it. I certainly can't afford to shoot a whole match with that stuff. But definitely for one magazine out of a stage. All right, let me tell you what I screwed up first. Then I'll tell you what I did real well. There was one stage at the sound of the buzzer we had to... From the left side of the barricade, we had to shoot three targets, two shots each. Then we had to shoot from the right side of the barricade, two targets in the middle. Then we had to move over to the barricade on the right and shoot three targets from the right-hand side of that barricade. So we start left, then go to the center, and then go right. All right, think about that. Well, starting to the left, I decided to challenge myself again, and this was good. Good practice. See, the reason I go to these matches is for practice like this. I decided that I was going to shoot the first three targets from the left side of the barricade left-handed. I was taught that in close-range gunfighting at Suarez International, that if you can practice that, sometimes that's quicker. It's quicker than for a right-hander to lean around the left-hand side of the barricade. So, at the sound of the buzzer, I draw my gun, nice clean draw. Shoot left-handed, three targets, double tap each one, That was fun. That was good. Matter of fact, I was only one down on three targets, so I zeroed out two of them, and then I was only 1 point down on the third target. So far, so good. Then I transitioned the gun to my right hand. And so then I'm shooting freestyle, and I'm shooting strong hand, and then I go to the right side of the barricade. Well, what happened there is when I transition, and you got to be careful if you're going to do something like this, when I transitioned the gun from my left hand to my right hand, I didn't have a firm enough grip on my G19. So limp-wristed, had a jam. I caused the jam because I didn't have a good enough grip. So then I got some malfunction clearance practice too, which was good, but then it threw my cadence off a little bit, and it still turned out all right. But I'm going to tell you, folks, just be careful. Just make sure if you're going to do stuff like that, that's good practice, but when you transition to the right hand, just make sure you got a good firm grip on that so that you don't limp wrist and cause a jam. Finished out the stage well, went to the right side of the barricade, zeroed out those three on the right side. So all I really did was kind of cost myself some time by shooting left-handed first and then causing a malfunction, causing a jam, clearing that. But, you know, the tap, rack, and bang cleared it just fine, like it's supposed to, no problem. So in that stage, I got to practice left-handed and I got to practice clearing a malfunction all in the same stage. That was a lot of fun. Okay, the final stage I want to talk about, that's another one that I screwed up pretty bad. Now, this was simple. And sometimes the simplest things you screw up, right? You know, the difficult ones, you concentrate on it because you know it's difficult, so you try a little bit harder. The last stage, supposed to be easy, right? Here's what it was. Start your first magazine with only two rounds. Shoot the target twice. Perform a slide lock reload or emergency reload, and then shoot the target again four times. So it's only six rounds. Two shots, slide lock reload, four shots. What do I do? Two shots, slide lock reload, four shots. I'm at slide lock reload again. Whoops. Second magazine was supposed to be loaded to division capacity, which means 10 rounds if you're shooting stock service pistol in IDPA. So guess what Bob Main did? I can't count. I didn't have enough. All I did was I loaded the first mag with two and the second mag with four. I'm thinking six rounds, right? So I didn't load my magazines properly, so I get a procedural. Zeroed them out. I mean, hey, as a matter of fact, the first two shots were headshots. I did that on purpose. And then the last four shots were center of mass, but I got a procedural because I can't count. In the game, that hurt you. I wasn't there to play the game tonight. I was there to get some good practice. So I'm still proud of myself that I zeroed that out, all six shots. If it was a bad guy, I think I probably would have stopped him. I probably would have stopped him with the first two headshots, quite likely. But as far as the game is concerned, that didn't work out so well. So shooting ESP tonight, my score wasn't very good. I don't think I did very well. As a matter of fact, I don't think I finished last, but in fact, I think there were only about three other ESP shooters. I might have finished last since there were only two or three other ESP shooters there. Most everybody tonight was shooting SSP. There were a couple of CDP shooters. A CDP means custom defensive pistol, shooting 45s mainly. I think there were two or three of those guys. If you're shooting 45 caliber in IDPA, you're automatically, regardless of the gun that you're shooting, you're automatically put into the custom defensive pistol category. And, you know, it's a long explanation for me to try to explain to you what custom defensive pistol is. If you're new to IDPA, you're not real sure what it is. But it's sort of like the single stack division in USPSA, although I don't believe single stack in USPSA, I don't believe that they require that you use 45s. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think single stacks in USPSA can use 9mm. Anyway, that's all the gaming stuff that I don't really pay a whole lot of attention to. I was pleased with my accuracy. I didn't have any misses tonight. Now, keep in mind, the longest target was 10 yards away. So I would have been really disappointed with myself if I would have had a miss. That's inexcusable, to completely miss a target from 10 yards away. I mean, I know we all do it, but that's what I strive for. When I go to IDPA shoots, I strive for things like trying to zero out a stage, even if I have to slow down. Zeroing out means I put everything in the center ring or a headshot which means they don't deduct any points from my score. I try to do that at least one stage. I did that tonight. And I also try to not miss any targets 10 yards or less. And I did that tonight. So those were my two successes. And I was moving along, you know, at a pretty good pace. My raw time was pretty good. So, you know, I wasn't pokey slow out there taking my time. I was making sure that I had rapid hits. And, you know, I'm going to tell you this, folks. I'm so glad that I'm out there using my Glock 19 and the 9mm round. Just so much more controllable for me, and I have a lot of confidence in it. And I think that's, you know, when it comes down to if you're in a gunfight, unfortunately, I hope you never are. As I say all the time, I hope you never find yourself in that position. But if you do, you want something that you can control, you want something you can be confident with, and you want something that you can get rapid hits with. Now, a few more things before I close out this segment. I can't remember if I said it in segment one or not. I was using my extended magazine release button tonight on my Glock 19, and that helped a little bit. Definitely helps with reloads. Definitely. Now, one thing I've noticed, let's get off IDPA for a minute. I've been carrying this G19 for a long time with the extended magazine release button. If I'm appendix carrying in my Dale Fricke holster, I cannot use my extended magazine release button. It pokes into my gut. The magazine release button pokes into my gut a little bit. Just enough. It sticks out just enough. But if I'm using it in my MTAC holster, and I'm carrying it at about the 330 position, then I can use my extended mag button. It doesn't poke my body. So that's kind of cool that I can keep the extended mag button on there and perform reloads a little bit faster. Every split second counts. So I noticed that a great deal tonight, being able to have that extended mag button instead of just the standard mag button that comes on the regular Glock 19. So that's pretty much it. You know, in final thoughts about this match tonight, you know, because it's an indoor match, nothing's more than 10 yards. That was kind of good. I was getting some practice of some up-close and personal work. Oh, you know what? There's one more thing I want to say. There was one stage that was really cool. The match director did a real good job designing this one. At the sound of the buzzer, we had to move off the X and engage two targets on the move, moving to our left, which was a lot of fun. So we had to double tap two targets moving to the left. Then we had to take a cover position behind a barricade, engage another target about 10 yards away, then we had to move away from that barricade and run to a barrel about 8 yards in front of us, and over the top of the barrel, we had to Mozambique three targets that were like practically on top of us. And that was a lot of fun, too, because that's obviously there you're pointing and shooting. There's no need to use sights when the targets are 3 feet away. That was a lot of fun. In Mozambique, two to the body, one to the head, three targets. However, if you count what I just said, engage two targets on the move, two shots each, another target with two shots from the barricade, that's six. I'm starting with 11 in the gun, so guess what? When I get to the second Mozambique target, I'm out of ammo. So we had to perform a reload while we were Mozambiquing the last three targets. So that was a fun stage. So in that stage, just in one quick stage, we got to practice shooting on the move, we got to practice shooting from a barricade, and then we got to practice shooting over the top of a barricade and shooting two to the body, one to the head on three targets in a row and perform an emergency reload. That was a good stage. I was only two down on that stage. I think I did that in about, I think it was 17.3 seconds, something like that, with only two down. So that was a good one. That was probably my favorite stage of the whole night. I enjoyed that one. That's some good action shooting right there, folks. Some good action shooting and some great, great practice, because shooting on the move, shooting stationary from a cover point behind a barricade, and then shooting over the top of something, and having to reload in between Mozambique drills and everything. That was a lot of fun there. So my compliments to the match director for setting that up. And he set that up indoors. So that was a lot of fun. So that's it. That's my IDPA recap Thursday night, October the 21st. Now, obviously, you're going to hear this out into the future. You're probably going to hear this next Wednesday. Not sure what date that is. I'm driving, so I'm paying more attention to the road right now and talking to you than I am anything else, which is what I should be. But typically, that's when I post my shows, so that's when you're going to hear it. So quick 15-second break, and I'll be back on to close out the show. Catch you in a bit. Okay, hopefully you enjoyed my IDPA experience there. Let me close the show with a couple of announcements and then a thought to leave you with. First of all, my upcoming CD, Steve Zofie and I are going to have some material on there, probably a good hour and a half's worth of material on shooting skills, stuff that we're not covering on this podcast. And by the way, let me just let you in on a little secret. The next show that I'm going to post in a few days is going to have a little bit of material from Steve and I talking about Chapter 2 of Brian Enos's book. I guarantee you the CD will make you a better shooter. It'll give you some things that you can think about and start working on. So order that. I'm going to release it on the 15th of December. If you don't want a CD, you can get a digital download. It's only $15, folks. It helps you support the show. But more importantly, it gives you a benefit of some things that you can pass around to some other people. Use it, burn it to your iPod, do whatever you want with it. I don't care. Once you get the CD from me or the digital download, it's yours to keep and do whatever you want with it. Go to handgunworld.com. There's a buy now button there. Get your copy. There's also a page that says Shooters Club CD. If you want to see some of the topics that are going to be on it, I've got a few of them posted there. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Also, join me at Shooters Legion, which is a new Facebook site. It's a Facebook-similar site. It's a networking site, pretty much set up like Facebook, strictly for shooters. And it's pretty good. Join me at ShootersLegion.com. Don't forget about the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, my YouTube channel, Handgun World Show, and, of course, my Facebook page. Lots of ways to get a hold of me. The email is bob@handgunworld.com. Let's see. I think that pretty much covers the announcements. Jeff Cooper said it best, and I want to leave it with you. Leave this with you. I think he said he had a quote, something that says, once you pick up a rifle, you immediately transform from being a subject to a citizen. And so, citizens, from me to you, I want to say thank you very much for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Show. My name is Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time. Goodbye.